On this week's episode of Friend Code, you're getting first-hand impressions of the Switch version of Link's Awakening from some of the allies who've never ever played the original before. How's it going, everyone? Damiani here. I'm joined by Brandon Jones and Ian Hink.
Hey.
We're actually going to talk about The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. This isn't a spoiler mode. You can catch the episode of Spoiler Mode that Ben and Brad and I recorded earlier. That's available now on YouTube for $1 and up patrons if you want to check that out. But this is a game. It's a remake. And I was very curious to get impressions from somebody or multiple people who had never actually played the original game. So they're playing the 2019 Switch remake is their first experience with it. And I'm kind of curious. We won't be going into spoilers in this, so that's why it's also not a spoiler mode.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, I want to start and just from what you've played, how do you feel about the game? Do you like this game? Are you enjoying it? Or do you find it maybe a bit dated?
I beat it last night.
Oh!
So, yeah, I enjoy it. I like
Yay.
It.
Yay.
We can get more into specifics, but did you like it?
I am liking it. I am. Amanda's liking it as well. We are swapping the cartridge back and forth. I only got three instruments, but I know a lot about it because I was just saying earlier we did the retrospective back at Game Trailers with the timeline back at Game Trailers, and I have watched you play it many times. I think one of the things that stood out was the walrus, or who's the guy blocking?
Ooh, the walrus.
The desert. I just remember Marin singing to him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yay!
It's
like
jumping out.
So I was like, when I ran by him, I was like, right. So I was familiar with stuff, but so yeah, haven't finished it, but I'm very much enjoying it. And I think the thing that most resonated with me is the music is so calming. It's so chill. It's so relaxing.
Yes.
Even a lot of the like action music, even a lot of like foreboding stuff is just really jolly. And it's just a very, because I'm playing it with headphones on like the whole time.
Yeah.
And so it's just like really nice to have that music hugging my ears.
The music for Dungeon 6?
Face Shrine?
Dungeon? Yeah, Face.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bop.
Yeah.
Damn. I want to like listen to that.
That was a really good rendition. Dungeon 4, Angler's Tunnel.
Oh,
I also
yeah.
talked about this with Ben and Brad because it's one of the themes that's the most original sounding now.
Oh, good.
The whole like kind of like string stuff that like is like the main melody now. It's not present in the original version at all.
Oh.
When the chiptune part plays, that's literally the extent of the original theme.
Do, 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 do,
it's just like do
oh, no,
do
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 do do do do do do do.
Yeah.
And then it's like it plays that for a second, and then it goes to like this very like nice symphonic suite. I'm like, whoa. I was like, wow, they really redid the song, and then the old thing kicks in. I'm like, oh, whoa, that's a very tasteful way to include that. But overall, the redone soundtrack in this game, I really liked it. I think it was one of the strongest points about the game.
Does each dungeon feature more prominently the instrument that you get at the end of that dungeon in its own song?
Oh.
I didn't put that two and two together, but that would be a cute touch.
I'm trying to think about that if I can.
I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true because I don't think the marimba or whatever, I don't know if that's really featured heavily in there. Excuse me. That went down the wrong way. But the ending credits, how they use the 8-bit theme there, like they kept going back to, like it would go back and forth between it. Not saying what the ending is, obviously, but like there's a version of the theme.
Credits roll.
It's the main theme. You've heard the theme song again. They play a version of it, and they keep going back and forth. And I was like, it was extremely impressive.
Oh, cool.
And there's a lot of that they do in this game. And even as you said, right down to like opening the treasure chest, like they added this like deep bass, like do 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 do. It's like deep. I'm like, whoa. It's intimidating, but it's kind of nice, you know.
It's cool.
I love getting Breath of the Wild, which had its very unique, like, you know, piano-heavy soundtrack. Then we get Smash Brothers, which is just this like huge Nintendo party with a soundtrack. Then Cadence of Hyrule, which is like gives us all these brand new versions of these themes, and then, you know, this revamp of just one specific game. But yeah, that's like the main thing that made me happy when I was going through it.
The game, the setting for this game, it's not Hyrule. No Triforce.
Koholint Island?
Yeah. How did you like the setting and the premise for this game? Not having like the usual like Zelda tropes there.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. It's interesting. It's interesting because neither of us has played it, but I think we both more or less knew the ending.
Okay. Yeah.
Before playing it, you know, because I feel like everyone's heard Dan. I don't want to say it in case someone out there hasn't, because it'd be a unique experience to play this without knowing the ending. But yeah, so like that colored my view a little bit of what was going on, you know. But like, oh yeah, this place is quaint, and the Overworld map is really fun. The interactions you can do are really cool. I really liked that kind of stuff about it. Yeah, a lot.
I liked it. I will have to stop myself because there were lots of stuff I was thinking about the entire time. Just in terms of like how this represents the rest of the series. Like you were saying, there's no, there's no Zelda, but it's like also just, you know, having familiar faces, having like, you know, the SimCity guy, having like the dad look like Mario, having, you know, like some of these people popping up in these little jokes. If you kind of know more about the story at large, it's cool to kind of, you know, see why, all of these things are being referenced. But for me, it kind of like reminds, this is a stretch. Go with me here.
Going.
It's kind of like Red Dead Redemption to like the mainline Zelda's GTA, because the mainline Zeldas are like, here's this whole world. Here's Hyrule. All these people live here. And even going back and replaying Ocarina of Time, which is like the best game I think anybody's ever made, you go to what's the red roof of village that keeps coming back?
Kakariko.
Kakariko. There's like four buildings, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, this is a town where a lot of people live, and like, eh.
Oh, you mean in Link's Awakening?
This is a small, no, but in Link's Awakening, this is a small island.
Okay, yeah,
so
yeah.
Like, I buy it. I
Main
buy that it's a,
being small,
I buy it's a small community. Yeah. I buy when they say like, oh yeah, this one guy just lives down there on the side of the beach. He's kind of an outcast. And like, yeah, we don't really spend that much time on that other side of the island. And they justify in the very beginning that like, when you showed up, all of this stuff started going crazy. So like, we're not used to, you know, pig people like running around in the cliffs right over there, but they are now. And so it just kind of sets itself up really to justify the size of its world, like Red Dead doesn't compare to GTA. It's why I love Red Dead, because like, I buy it. I buy that this number of people walking down the street live in the supplied buildings, you know, that I'm seeing. And so that was always kind of fun, because like, immersion's a big deal for me. And I think maybe it was one reason I didn't dive at like Oracle and even like Phantom Hourglass and stuff, which Amanda really liked. So it was interesting playing something that is kind of restricted in the classic Zelda sense, and enjoying it as much as I did.
But I loved the sort of Zelda tropes that you did do, like getting the upgrading to getting the bomb, or like, I guess just being allowed to buy the bomb, and like, you know, all that kind of stuff. And the
trading sequence
was a lot of fun, especially because there were a few times where I very organically like figured out where the next step would be, you know, that kind of stuff. Or with like some of the stuff you need to get places, I like would talk to someone over here and then remember like, oh right, there's that thing back in the village that probably has something to do with this. That happened a few times, which was really cool.
Yeah, I really, remembering back on my first time, I really loved how the trading sequence was required and integral to part of the game, because it added a little bit more personality, not just to the characters you're interacting with. They would bring them to the forefront again every now and then. Hey, remember this character? But also like, it felt like the world was lived in. There's like these threads that keep evolving.
Yeah.
And Link's Awakening was the first game to introduce the trading sequence too.
Well, and not knowing going in what it was for, I was like, well, this is really cool. And then like the payoff at the end, I thought was like, there were a few times in this game where I thought I was getting something that was a secret that then later on I was like, oh no, that's mainline. I needed that. Like, I could not have done this without that. Okay.
But I kind of got tripped up on that. And that was actually one of the weirdest things going back, because I kind of got myself in trouble. It's like I had the same issue with Dragon Quest Builders 2, because I played Builders 1. And so I was like, well, I know what to do. And the game's like, stop. You know, and like I would, you know, get stuck because I'm like, oh, I'm way ahead of what I should be doing. And so like that was a moment where I was like, oh, that's the old side quest thing. Cool. I'll just log that and I'll do that later whenever I just happen to bump into somebody. And then I was like, cool, what do I need to do to progress the story? It's like that, the thing you just picked up.
The thing that you ignored.
And so like that was the first time I actually had to like boot up a video and be like, what?
Oh, so you went straight to the video.
I take that. Yeah, I went to the monkey like, what do you want?
What? Who are you?
Did you ever discover that you could go to one of the phone booth houses and call up for help?
Well, that's why I didn't want to check a video, because I'm like, I got phone booth guy. He's killing me. I can. And he's so adorable, too, when you go talk to him. He's like, do the phone.
I love him. Yeah.
He's like, shy. Please call. Yeah.
Oversight. Shy guy should have been in his house. The podium for the little figurine.
Oh,
because he's a shy guy.
All right.
Yeah.
It's an oversight. Yeah. I'm just saying. No, but kind of that brings me to my only real negative on this game. Besides, it's a bummer about the frame rate. I mean,
oh, yeah.
There's that. But you asked at the beginning if it felt dated. And I don't know if it's dated necessarily, but maybe it is. But, like, there were definitely a few times, and I mentioned this before, I think, but, like, maybe it's because I did play Breath of the Wild and Twilight Princess as my first. Like, Twilight Princess was my first Zelda game, you know, in earnest. And then Breath of the Wild I just devoured. And so in Breath of the Wild especially, they give you tools, and those are the tools you use to solve literally every puzzle. And in this, it's like, you know, near end game bosses, and it's just like, no, you have to dash now, which you've never had to do before. Just do that and know it somehow. And, like, there was nothing to telegraph that, really. Like, there were a few moments, and I tried my ass off not to look stuff up, but I think there were three times playing this game I got lost in Eagle Rock or whatever, and one of the bosses where I was just like, no, two of the bosses, I was like, literally, what do I do to hurt this thing? I tried all of my tools.
Oh, dear.
And nothing worked.
Curious what those two were. You don't have to say their names, but, like,
one of them you have to pick something up and throw it back at them, and the other one you have to dash at them. In one of the phases.
Good to know.
Yeah, well, because it was kind of frustrating, and it took me out of it just a little bit to have to be like, okay, come on now. And then, like, yeah, that one dungeon, you had to pick something up and throw it at a column, and I just wasn't thinking of that.
Yeah, it's interesting, because you said, I remember when you brought it up before, you said you thought you had to place the object in a slot or in something, versus using it as a mechanism for destroying things. You're like, wait, what?
Well, and I don't know. I mean, I think it's one-to-one to the Game Boy version. I think part of my thinking was wrong because I was like, well, they wouldn't have had the technology to do that sort of thing back then, you know, like throwing things? Like, that's too complicated. But it's like, well, no, they easily could have done that. I don't know why.
I'm sorry. I'm curious what you have to say about Ian's point.
Well, I was just going to bring up, like, the older style of Zelda, because it's a great point to make about how Breath of the Wild is a game where you know the tools.
Yeah.
The puzzles are designed with a much different philosophy in Breath of the Wild. They're designed around, like, more physics, or use the items you already have to get creative that way.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't have to worry about you don't have a certain tool. Like, you know you have the answers. It's up to here to come up with a solution. Where in older Zelda games, it might be you literally might not have the right item. You might have not gotten the dungeon item yet. There might be an item from somewhere else you didn't get that might be necessary for this.
Yeah.
And that was, for a long time, the Zelda formula. And I know it's always interesting to think back on it because it's something I loved a lot. But then thinking about it now, it's like from a logical standpoint, as you brought up, Ian, I can see how it's difficult for some people to like think like that, especially if they played something like Breath of the Wild first or more prevalently or more heavily, and then trying to go back to an older style Zelda and just be like, wait, I'm still getting new items, and wait, how was I supposed to even figure this out and stuff like that? And the best answer I can come up with is honestly was like trial and error. Like the older Zelda games taught you from the first game pretty much. Whatever items you have, try them out and see what they can do. And if you don't, you might be missing something. So go back out and go explore the world again and see if you miss something.
It's interesting because it's a double-edged sword, right? Double-edged master sword, where, like, when it pays off, it feels so cool and so good that you're like, I thought of doing this. I thought of using this. They showed me the way it was set up. Everything was laid out to make me think, like, oh, I need to use this thing to get over there or whatever. But when it doesn't pay off, and when it's like the thing that's weird, and I've heard people say this, like levy this complaint against old Zelda games before, I think it didn't like ruin it for me or anything, but it was like where it is a little strange are the times where you use a mechanic like once in like one place and then it's just done. And you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess we're not doing that again, you know?
Yeah, they have a habit of doing that, especially when they tried to make the dungeons a little bit more unique. Mm-hmm. They would be designed around a specific item, usually. One of the best examples I can give is the spinner in Twilight Princess. You played that one.
Yeah.
That item that like, kind of surfs on, and it's like a gear-looking thing.
Yeah.
And there's a whole dungeon designed around using that and, like, jumping back and forth. And aside from like one or two secrets in the overworld, like heart containers or something, it really isn't used in any serious capacity beyond that. It's like, oh, this whole dungeon is designed around that. and then you don't need to use it again, really. Or it's like, it doesn't encourage you to use it to like, oh, there's like alternate paths you can take or something like that. Nothing like that. Yeah. Whereas in like Breath of the Wild, what you had, it said, yeah, you keep coming back to this. Keep thinking of different ways to do that.
They gave you all of the tools.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not completely understandable complaint, yes.
There are a few moments in the overworld map where you use an item in this one, and I was like, oh, that's so cool. Like, yeah.
One thing that I got in trouble with that I thought was funny was, like, because it is such a specific one-to-one, not completely one-to-one, because like I am familiar with the maps. Like I did, and even just after playing it, I went back and saw the comparison. But, like, there's something about the Game Boy where you would walk into a room and kind of just visually identify, almost like how you'd instantly identify the different Tetris pieces, where I would recognize, like, ah, that's an object, that's an enemy, that's a thing I can't use. Where, like, when you gloss everything up, you kind of start thinking you got more options. You know, like, come into a room and I'd be like, okay, you know, and, okay, like, and like, when they started introducing, like, red wall, blue walls and orange walls, I'd be like, all right. I can't jump up on them now, but maybe I'll like leave a bomb on the switch, and then they'll pop up, and then like I'll use the inertia to bounce off. And it's like, no, dude, you hit the switch and you're done.
Although,
so I was overcomplicating a lot of things. There, and I had to get in that mindset, like it's Game Boy, it's Game Boy.
But there were two or three times, even with those switches, whereas like I did a thing that I felt at the time. I was like, I'm breaking this. I'm not supposed to be able to do this. And then later on you realize like, oh no, that's the actual solution. Okay. Like,
yeah.
This is bonkers. Like.
Yep. It looked even more goofy on the original version. The raising and lowering the blocks and like standing on top of them was like an intended mechanic.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, like the visuals are updated so you can clearly tell you're on top of them. When the old one, it was like your shadow was still touching the ground and stuff, so it looks like you're walking through them. And when you had to jump on top of other ones to keep going, it's like, am I gonna land on it?
This?
And there's some times where you like wouldn't like go halfway through it, and it'd say, yes, you made the jump, or nope, you're falling down a pit or something now, or you're on the lower ones now. Yeah, but like I get that. Like, they add more twists.
There's like so many staircases into the water, and I'm just like, oh, maybe this one. You know, like no, you cannot swim. Like you'll figure that out later. Like oh, got it.
Don't worry.
But it just looks so inviting. But again, like on the Game Boy, you would just learn like that's just, whatever symbol that is means, you know, do not trespass.
Wah wah.
So
definitely, like, I mean, I wonder how they changed if jumping mechanics are a little changed, because like there were a few jumps I pulled off.
You're talking about
like
physics or
physics wise?
They
like,
definitely are 100% they are
like,
changed.
There were a few jumps I pulled off where I was like, probably couldn't have done that on the Game
Boy.
You're
like Lost Island, your Game Breaker Island. That was
he bailed.
That
me
was
out.
One of my favorite gaming moments of 2019.
That
was him.
Me too. That was
a journey.
I can see your perspective from that, but in truth, the Link's Awakening Game Boy version is more, you're more mobile when you're jumping. Like, there's more range and ability, like. What you're getting at is you could, like, this game allows you to walk over gaps, like, a little bit further out before it registers. You're in a bottomless pit, fall down.
Right.
So you can get a lot further out and then begin your jump. What I'm referring to, so you probably got this far. It's the dungeon you're about to do.
Cool.
There is a part where there is a cross-section gap.
Yeah.
And initially you have to jump over it horizontally, and then they tease you with the top and bottom like gaps, like, oh, can I make that? You absolutely cannot make it in this version. In the original version, this is funny, you can curve your jump easily. Like, Link is super agile when he's jumping. Like, it feels like super fluid. This, it feels a little bit more stiff, rigid, almost like formulaic. Like, you are always going to end up in X spot no matter what. Like, you can always tell where you're going to end up. Like, three squares over is where you're always going to end up. This had way more leeway. I always curved up. Like, I went from, I started on the left side, jumped, and then curved and would end up on the up part. And like, oh, that's like it's teaching you need to learn how to do curved jumps, because there's other parts in the original game you can use them too. And I thought that was the normal way. I didn't know that was something special.
Curved
so
jump
when the Switch
meta.
When the Switch version, I got to the dungeon, I couldn't do that. I'm like,
kept dying.
I was
like, what's wrong?
I was like, wait a second, where do you go? Well, let me go right, obviously. And I'm like, okay, now what's down here? Is there any, like, I thought it was a pointless room with like a map or something. You go down, like, it makes you go right, get a bunch of keys, and then you have to backtrack and then go back to the beginning and go a different way, and then it makes you go up. And I was like, wow, this whole wing of the dungeon I thought was just like random useless items that you don't like. I thought they're all rupee chests or something. Like, I don't need them or something. And yeah, even that same dungeon, the door before the boss, I didn't know you're supposed to do that. In the original version, you can make a really easy jump to jump onto this platform over a gap, and you'd be right at the boss door. in this version of the game, they force you to go through a staircase sequence that then brings you up right by the boss room as well, but like where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
But and they put objects to block you from making that jump anymore.
That's funny.
Because I think I was the only one. I think most everyone thought in the original version that was the way to get to the boss door was, oh, you come down this little corner area, you have this like one gap, like wide square, you got to jump over, and then you're on the platform.
Yeah.
Now they put a bunch of bottles there, like, or, yeah. Bottles and just like whatever, yeah.
I love the director commentary of Portal is really great. You can play through. I think it's on Orange Box. You can play through.
Really?
And there's like little like speech bubbles, whoa, and you click them, and then they talk while you're inside
the
level.
I never did this.
And it's great because like a lot of what they talk about is like this wall exists because people just jumped into the room. And we were like, yeah.
All
right. We were like, no, we want you to cinematically go down the staircase and look at this event. And they just ran right in the room and picked the gun up. And they were like, no, okay, put a door.
We're going to put
and
a glass
then
wall.
One of my favorites was there was one where you can solve it without doing it the way they wanted to do it. And they knew you could do that and they kept it in because they're like, if you do it that way, you know, kudos.
Yeah.
Like, we'll give you that one.
Yeah.
Because it's, you solve the puzzle, basically, the same thing happens. But just, yeah, it's always
I
that.
I love stuff like that.
Brings, yeah. The your thing, Ian, though, it brings up a good point. I brought this up in spoiler mode as well. How Link handles this game versus the original game, like, all the changes they made. So yeah. I don't know how privy you are to the changes they made in terms of quality of life updates, but, like, the biggest
not
one, the biggest one is the item switching.
Oh.
They map more of your items to the face button so you don't have to toggle. Basically, like the power bracelet, the jump,
right,
the dash were all individual items you had to equip manually
on
the A or B slot. And you only had the A or B slot in the original version. And you had to keep switching those out. Every time you want to use
the power bracelet?
Even the power bracelet, you had to equip it to pick up some pots and smash them and then take it off when you didn't need it again because it took up a slot that you needed for stuff. So this version doing
terrible.
This is great. Yeah. So I feel like both versions have their positives and their weak points, but somewhere there should be a third version that takes all of them, best parts of both, and makes a third version.
It was really funny having, again, like played Breath of the Wild, where it's just physics all everywhere, and there aren't like, no, you can't jump off this higher ledge because of the puzzle, you know? Because like there were plenty of times in this game, you know what I'm talking about? Like an actual like, two height ledge. You can't jump off of it. The game will stop Link and make him fall straight down because you could break the dungeon design.
Right.
And it was really funny to me because like there were definitely times where I was like, okay, here I go, dash, jump, die. I was like, oh, right, I can't do that. But it's like then
stop thinking outside the box.
Right, you have to use a specific item to get across
those. It's always funny
how
those things work like that.
But again, I mean, I appreciate it, you know. Within the context of this game, I appreciate it because that's the puzzle.
It was nice to see the topography
in
this game, like how it was meant to be viewed, with like everything's elevation and stuff. Like, oh, that was actually higher. I mean,
oh yeah, cool.
The sprite work tried its best to show this was above this or this elevated, but obviously with it, like the slants and stuff, everything kind of looked like it was on the same plane. Essentially,
I was actually wondering like how they did all
and
that.
And now this, like, especially looking in the distance, like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, it was a really nice thing to see the island fully realized like that.
It's a masterclass, this game, especially the overworld, of gating, like really good gating of like item gating and progression gating and stuff. Because like there are times where you come across something, you know, that you just can't overcome, and then later you have the thing you need and you can just do it.
When
and
you
it,
get
it
that new
so
thing,
good.
It feels great. You're like, oh, I can't wait to go.
It's really, really good stuff.
Pick up all those damn rocks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Picking up the rocks felt so good.
When you finally get that.
Yeah.
And another great change they made in both old versions, the original and the color version DX, if you ran into an item like a rock or a pot or one of those they're rubber things in this game. I thought they were crystals that you were smashing with the Pegasus boots. Those dark rubbery things.
They look like circus tents.
Yeah.
And they circus tent
everyone who played the original version
so
was like, weren't those crystals that Link just smashed through? Now you think about like, wouldn't you? Yeah, it would probably hurt. Anyway, in the original versions, anytime you interacted with those, made contact with them without the right item equipped, it would bring up a text message saying, hey, did you know that like this is a pretty heavy thing? Maybe if you had something to lift it, even if you had the item, it would still always do it. Now if you hug it, it will give you a prompt to say, do you want to see this warning message? Like if you go up to a rock and like hit A without the power brace, it'll be like, oh, this is a pretty heavy object. Yeah. You might need an item to lift it. Such a good change.
It is
every time you accidentally hit something, it's like, please stop.
It is a little funny though that even to the end of the game, it still gives you the little message of like if you get the power triangle or the defense acorn or whatever, it's like I know what the acorn does, game. I know. But I'm glad I complained about that. I'm glad they left that in because I was whining about that to Ben, and then he told me about the color dungeon, which I never would have done because I didn't know about it.
Yeah. That was the book.
Color Dungeon.
There's
Jones.
A book.
Oh, that's the new one, or the one that was
in the DX version.
But you can get the thing you get for completing the Color Dungeon. Very
worth
good.
Worth it. All right.
Very definitely good. You have a choice. I thought about it for a second, then I think I made the right choice. Cause but boy, oh boy, it's worth it.
I don't think you can go wrong with either of the choices. Yeah. They're pretty good.
Yeah. It's really super hella worth it. You can probably already do it.
I think after you complete the second dungeon,
nice.
You technically have the option to go into it. You'll have the ability to reach it by then.
Love how the map, is revealed slowly. So, I love that, like, because that's just how I play Zelda games, open world games, you know. And it's always gratifying to have gone back to a place, and then back to the store, and then I'll be like, oh right, and I'll boot up the map and just seeing it revealed. And it seemed like. It's interesting because it didn't seem that big. When I first jumped in, I looked at the map, I was like, oh, it's kind of small. And now being several hours into it and having no problem, just like it's fun to just run around. You know, just that forest in the top left there, it's fun to just go back into it and see now that I'm powered up, maybe I missed something or maybe I'll go through that dungeon. It's actually fun to explore these things. And I think I don't have that much of a history. Like my first Zelda game was Ocarina of Time and then Majora's Mask, like I was obsessed with. I played, all of Breath of the Wild, but it's not a franchise like I know a lot of the games from. Link 2 actually was like my first real Zelda game that I dived into on the NES. And so the top-down stuff, playing through Pokemon now, it's like really easy for me to get lost playing Pokemon Silver. There's something about this like screen-to-screen top-down that it's tough for my brain to really be like, oh, I know exactly how to get there. I'm always like, oh, God, that's right. I got to loop back around. But I really enjoyed it. I just think the world is like you were saying, it's divided up very, you know, smartly. Like just that gap between the town where they have the plants, which you first can't get past, and then the rocks right next to it, which you can't get past. And then later just the action of like swipe, poof. Feels good because you're like, I can do that now because I'm kind of bulked up, you know, just coming out of town. I'm like, I'm a powerful warrior. I can move these things.
Feels it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. It's also great how, going with a seamless world. So there's no more screen scrolling like that. It is easier to figure out where things are. You get a better kind of lay of the land, essentially. And I think that this does a better service to the design of the world.
I suppose the overworld used to page, didn't it?
Yeah, it used to do that. So it'd be easier to get lost in that because you wouldn't see what's on the next screen.
Right.
I know there was some concern about, oh, that's going to A, make the game maybe shorter, and B, for new people, they'll be able to see what was supposed to be hidden in the original version. And I don't know if that really ever came into play. I haven't seen anyone since its release complain about that.
If anything, I mean, I'm trying to think of an example of that happened to me, but like, if anything, I appreciated that. Like in the forest you were talking about, like I remember seeing a mushroom or whatever on the other side of the trees.
Yeah.
That's what told me I needed to try to get over there.
Yeah.
You know, like if I didn't see that, I wouldn't have tried to go left. You know?
There was one specifically in a dungeon where I got up on a platform that let me look into a room and see that the other room next to it had the breakable wall.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, I just need to bomb the wall that doesn't look like it's breakable.
I feel they do a pretty good job. If you, as long as you take the time to go around and look at everything, they'll visually give you a good clue as to how to like progress or your objective. And adding, having a wider screen and being able to see beyond the original boundary of a single screen, I think really helped that. I think it was only helpful and honestly a better choice for that.
I mean, like, there were still plenty of times in this game I felt pretty lost, you know?
Yeah.
Even with all the updates, you know?
Yeah. I know you said, in your words, you said it was like a masterclass in terms of like the gating design. I'm kind of curious because I would argue this game falls more on, because of that and some other things, this game falls on the more linear end of Zelda design games because you kind of have to go in a very specific order and do things in a very specific sequence. And I'm kind of like, did that ever come across? Did you ever think about that? Did it even like negatively impacted anything?
Here's the thing. To me, there are two kinds of linear, right? There's like linear, where it's literally just like a story going straight through a bunch of hallways or whatever. And then there's a more like Metroidvania-esque sort of linear, like Bloodborne or this, or Super Metroid or whatever, where it's like you get the thing and then go back to the place, you know. So, I mean, this game, it sort of is a Metroidvania kind of layout. And that always feels a little more rewarding to me because, like, yeah, it is linear, but it puts the onus on you to find the line again,
okay,
you know?
Yeah.
What I liked is that every time that line did go from, like, point, you know, B to C, it always revealed like a new area, and so that was always really exciting.
Yeah.
And you could, I could kind of tell when I was just like, "What's up here?" It was cemetery. I'm not gonna mess with that yet. I'm clearly not supposed to be there. I mean, I can go over there if I'm feeling bold and explore and like, "Oh, look at that! I found a staircase." Like that's always fun, but it's very clear. Like this is not where the game directed me. It told me to go to the prairie. I'm in the prairie right now.
Right.
You know, so I like that everything was segmented and even. With the new graphics, even with that, it still kind of makes sense. You still go through that forest, and you're not like, what a hilariously small forest. I'm curious if something like, because I didn't play the original or the new updated version, but like Metroid 2, because a lot of people complained, you know, Samus was huge. Just the way that Metroid didn't scale and look right on the Game Boy. You know, it's like if you were to really one-to-one, like, recreate those environments.
Yeah, I think Link felt a little bit bigger on screen in the original version. So this one, he's like, feels a little smaller. But again, I think the look of this feels better, like in terms of scale. Like the scale of everything feels like much better because, you know, it's on a bigger screen. They use more of the real estate. A lot of Game Boy games fell victim to like it was that smaller screen. Yeah. And, you know,
I mean, what are you going
to
do?
Yeah. And there was also handhelds that need to make everything bigger sprite wise so you could see it more clearly. It was just a product of its time.
I have a question for you, Michael Damiani.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the timeline, could we talk timeline for a second? It's chronological timeline of game release.
Okay.
So we have the original Legend of Zelda followed by Link's Awakening, or Link 2 comes out first?
So it's the Legend of Zelda. In terms of release order, it's the original Legend of Zelda on NES. Then Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, came out on NES.
Right.
Then A Link to the Past came out on Super Nintendo. And Link's Awakening came out on Game Boy.
Right?
Got it. Yes. Okay, because I thought this might have been
this
before.
Came out in the fall of 1993.
Because interesting having Zelda 2 Adventures of Link, which was my like Zelda game that I knew was my entry into the franchise, and then having this with the side-scrolling segments, was it kind of weird being like, are they going to do this in the future, or is this just like a weird little experiment? Because that was fun playing this and then walking down that ladder and being like, yeah, wow, this never comes back, does it? Like nothing even close to this. Maybe Link Between Worlds, you know, with the wall mapping. Like.
Yeah, they have some of that. I mean, I know Zelda 2 is side-scrolling, but I always took the stairway segments where it's side-scrolling to be a nod to the original Legend of Zelda, because when you went down the stairs to get an item, it technically acted like a side-scroller because you could go up and down the stairs, and then it would let you go left and right on the bottom, and then you go up another stair and you could get an item or go up the stair. It wasn't really top-down perspective anymore. It was meant to be side-scrolling perspective. But
yeah,
within
the
limitations.
Right.
So that is what I always took it as. But at the same time, I think it comes back in other games, but it is so it hasn't been in like the newer games, obviously. That
right.
Like hasn't been in like a 3D Zelda game like Breath of the Wild trying to do something like I think of like Super Mario Odyssey, where they do the gimmick throwback to like, let's play it like old school Mario in certain parts. It's like, man, that was literally Link Between Worlds. Like, what if in Breath of the Wild 2 or something, you found a wall and like all of a sudden it's like, play it like old school Zelda, like top down or something? I was like, whoa, that'd be kind of cool. They did like a top down mode
like
for
a
dungeon.
Book you open up,
yeah.
And like each page is like a different area of Zelda.
But
was that weird? Just at the time, do you recall? I don't know if you played these games.
Oh yeah,
you know, when they first came
out.
Well,
it was a combination of like that. The being able to manually jump with an item in a top-down Zelda game was like, holy crap, this is like insane that they're doing this and stuff. And yeah, like those like underground sections also were the parts where like all the Mario enemies started appearing. Like, why are there Goombas? So it's like, whoa, Piranha Plants, yo.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, I always took it because the game's a dream. They're just going a little crazy with it.
Yeah.
But it was like cool. I was like, well, this is really neat and different than anything I'd seen before. Yeah.
Yeah. It felt nice. It didn't like break the,
The one I think one of the final things I kind of wanted to ask about, because you kind of referenced about being lost a few times in terms of like where to go, was the overall difficulty of this game. Did you feel it was like too challenging, too difficult from where you like, especially how much you've played, and maybe comparing it? I guess it's kind of hard to compare that type of difficulty to something like a Breath of the Wild. You know, how did you feel about the difficulty of this game?
Like, for me, Breath of the Wild had one or two boss fights that felt like a difficulty spike, like the lightning boss or whatever, the really fast guy.
Yeah.
He was really tough for me. And then the final boss, kind of. But this one, the difficulty just came from me not knowing what I was supposed to do and then dying from attrition.
Okay.
Usually, like, then once I figured it out, or in the two cases or three cases where I had to look it up, then I beat it no problem, like, with very little damage, like, the next try.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, it was kind of a weird, more of a mental gate than a difficulty one.
Okay.
But I heard tell of some kind of, if you do the whole game without dying, something happens or something, and that seems hard to me. Because I fall a lot, and, like,
That was my main nemesis, was impatience. You know, knocking open plant, man, it's like Army of Darkness when he's like, with the book. Like, there was this one, the guy who has the farm, and he's like, you need the thing to let you back in my farm to get those items. There's like a plant right out in front of his front door that I would like 8 times in a row, just whoosh, fall in the hole. Like, it would never kill me, but it would. And these guys that you have to knock off ledges that you can't do damage to.
Yeah.
I would always just be on the wrong side of him and be like, no, get out. Like, would fall off.
But like, yeah, it's just like little things.
Never,
yeah.
I would never rage quit. Like, it didn't make me angry. Yeah. It just, but that was it.
But yeah, I'm trying to remember, like, there comes a point in this game, especially because the game gives you the classic Zelda tools, like a fairy in the bottle or secret medicine in this one, where it's like, you almost can't die, like, 60% of the way through this game, kinda.
Yeah, I would say it's kind of, this isn't that very challenging of a Zelda game.
Yeah.
And in normal mode, they make it kind of hard to die.
Yeah.
It's just like little things will add up if you're just like ignoring a lot of stuff and you'll pay attention. And that, like, that's not really challenged so much as, like you said, it's like attrition. It's like, oh, yeah, just like was spending so much time.
I didn't break any pots and get hearts.
It's like
for
if
a
you
while,
really like stopped and like went back a screen or something and like broke some things, got some health, you would have always been fine. It's just like, that's tedious. I want to keep progressing. You know, I don't want to go back and do something like
one
that.
One dungeon, I ran out of whatever it was, magic powder or bombs or something. I literally had to leave and go buy
bombs. Oh, I had a bomb moment. It was like, okay.
Which is weird because
I guess I'll leave. Which I think I've done in Zelda games before. Yeah. I think in Ocarina of Time I did that a couple times.
But the weird thing is every dungeon after that, maybe it was just because I had to backtrack so much because I was like, what the hell am I trying to do right now? But they give you the little flying items to such an extent that, like, you know, you end up maxed out on everything, even though you're bombing constantly, you know? Like, so even that became not a worry, which is good because the first time I had to leave a dungeon to go buy bombs, I was like, stupid old school design garbage. Like,
I'm done with this game. I know that feeling. Any final thoughts? Anything you want to say?
I didn't really speak to just this game is adorable.
Yes.
Like it's so great to have on Switch. Like it just it makes sense. It's exciting not only that it's been so long since that game, but it's nice that it's been so long. And like, look at where we, you know, it's on a portable Nintendo system, and so it's neat seeing it, you know, hold up really well. I actually didn't have an issues. I don't think I've gotten to the meat of it yet, but I had almost next to no issues with frame rate just in my playthrough so far. The focus stuff at the top and the bottom, there's some weird.
You don't like the tilt shift
where
effect?
I'm just like, just right at the edges, and
I
not
like
always.
Tilt shift. I like tilt shift.
I do, but there are just some parts where I'm just like, it does not work on that texture, or it just
the frame
it gets a little out of whack.
Seems to dip every time you go back out into the overworld.
I think I have played this. I think I maybe started on the TV, but I've played it almost exclusively handheld. It's just so just the way that the Switch feels, the way the buttons feel, the way again you were talking about how you can configure all the items and everything, and yeah, just the size of the world. I talk kind of about the realism of it in relation to other Zelda games, but I get excited when I see like a new building. Like I just, it's such a fun world to navigate, and it's such a fun mix of like, you know, kind of tense wonder. Like there definitely seems to be a sense of like not dread, but like a little bit of unease, a little bit of something's not quite right. This owl guy is kind of not on the page with everybody else, and like Marin's like moving around, and you know, it was they introduce kind of like scary parts. There's almost like a threat right away, you know, like right at the beginning you run back into town and like they're all freaking out, and
they like kidnap,
but it's super jolly and quaint at the same time, and so it's a fun balance of those things, and it also too, like knowing kind of the whole arc of the story going into it, and just constantly having that in the back of my mind, being like, cool, what a like a perfect side story, you know, Zelda game, but also like a really poignant moment if you want to believe that like these memories are shared between these characters in the grand timeline scheme. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, Damiani. But it's a cool chapter. It's a really cool great opportunity to go back. It's like the Yakuza games coming back. It's just like, oh, nice.
Yeah.
You know, now we got to do. Now you know, got to play through this. So I was I was curious to check it out, and then when you were like, hey, I want to do a video, where I was like, I excel at those
videos.
Like,
wow.
No, it's just videos where it's like, I'm super ignorant about Project X. I'll play it for the first time. I missed that entirely. Which seems odd
that.
As a Zelda fan. Seems weird. Yeah. Zelda's a weird franchise to just have completely missed a game. Like if they do Oracle now, it's like, let's do it.
Well, that's my thing is like, cause
Minish Cap, let's do it.
Right, because I've not, you know, my Zelda blind spots are myriad, and like I would love to have updates of in this fashion, or you know, not necessarily speaking to the art style, but like updates like this on the Switch for everything. Go for it. Like I'd buy it. I do still think $40 might have been a better price point, but
sure.
And
I would like.
I'm not mad.
And I'd like. It's kind of how I felt about the first Mario Maker. Like I always, and just when you get something like Rare Replay, or you get like, you know, some of these like collections that just go above and beyond. Mm. I would not hate to have some kind of inclusion of what the original game was like. Like I definitely think they want new people. They want new people coming in and just be like, no. You go do that research on your own. This is a brand new $60 Nintendo game. They're what original? What were you talking about? This is a brand new game. You know, and it's like
as
if
like
you
an unlock
know what
or
you know
was
going
a
into
dungeon
it.
Or something.
That was a,
yeah.
That was a but even that was a big missed opportunity that they
even
include that
Halo
there.
2 and especially both of the Monkey Island remasters are so great because you just click, go back and forth.
Grim Fandango did a really good, yeah.
And that's always a treat. And I don't know about the click, because you think scale-wise, it feels like he has like a little more space to occupy each room than he had. A little more movement, a little more freedom of movement.
16 by 9, right?
Yeah.
It'd be nice at least to like, even you can even do kind of a cute example of that where like you collect images and it's just like, what's this ancient image? And you're like, it's like, oh, it's a screenshot of that bot. Okay, cool.
That would actually
so you collect those.
That would
and,
fit within the kind of realism of the world too.
Yeah,
I would dig that. Or you get a camera. They've had cameras.
The DX version
game,
had a camera side.
If he like
quest.
Takes a picture of something, funny. It shows the Game Boy version instead. Or something.
In the DX version, there were 20 locations that.
His camera's busted.
If you triggered certain events in 20 different spots in the original game,
in 20 different spots.
Yeah, there would be it would go into like a
get on it.
A different perspective. I don't know if you got it, but there's two remnants of it. One more distinct than the other. There's a shot where you're with Marin and you're on the cliffside, and it's kind of a side perspective, and they're looking out over the ocean. It's actually a nod to the photograph you can get in the DX version. Anyway, there's a photographer who will like give you who as you get these photographs, you had to figure out how to trigger these events to get the photograph, and you go back, you can look at them, and you can also print them out with the Game Boy printer at the time.
Oh, nice.
The gimmicks.
I remember.
Yeah, it was this whole side quest where it got you to encourage you to not only just explore the world but figure out how to trigger them from like happening. One was falling in the well near the town with Marin following you, so only when she's with you, and she'd fall on top of you, and she still does that in this game, and she'll get like freaked out, oh, are you okay, and stuff, and check on you. But in the DX version, it'd snap a photo, and it'd be like her landing on you and going bonk or whatever. All like it looked like what's it called, the chibi version, like comics, for Coma comics, I believe they're called, 4-page panels in Japan.
Okay,
they're like always draw them kind of like chibi styled. It was like kind of like that.
That's funny.
And it was kind of like really cute and adorable and would have fit perfectly with this game in my opinion.
Yeah,
but they went with the chamber dungeon stuff, but oh well.
And because there's a lot, you got the kids being like, hey, here's press A. I don't know what the heck that means. I'm just
a
kid.
I love that
like, there's
bit.
A lot of fourth wall breaking that, again, just this kind of like passive nature of the narrative, like really it fits all of that stuff.
The kids
and,
saying,
and
like,
knowing what a lot of these faces are referencing, you know, it would have been fun to maybe have one or two characters again, haven't finished it, but that reference, like, haven't we done this before? Or someone that is maybe aware that they're in a remake, you know, and like talks about, you might not know what I'm talking about, Link, but blah, 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 you know. In the original version, this guy wasn't there, so I don't know.
That's funny. The kid saying, press A to do this. Yeah. I'm just a kid. I don't know what I'm talking about. It was so funny to me. I don't know what that means. I'm just a kid. The one thing I do wonder, are there any secrets in this that are new to this version? Like,
Added more seashells. They added more pieces of heart to find. So they more densely packed secrets. Mm-hmm. But they were new rewards. The seashell tuner.
Oh,
that
didn't
exist in the original game.
Which is necessary.
Very, very helpful.
And Dompei,
very
helpful. Is that how you say his
name? Dompei, Grave Keeper from Ocarina of Time. It's not literally the same one, but resembles him.
Right.
Has a little hut, and it's like a... People have called it a Zelda Maker to like the Mario Maker, but it's not really that. It's more like, here's a template
it's
of...
It's like Chalice Dungeons.
Sort when you play
but
through
you build
them,
you build
you basically
them.
It's right. It's a dungeon builder, but like you have to, they give you a set of conditions you have to meet, and you place the pieces. It's more like a puzzle game. It's definitely more of a puzzle thing than actual proper maker. That's new.
I'm gonna have to jump into that
in there. And yeah, there really aren't anything new. They updated some Easter eggs here and there, but like the way you trigger them still pretty much the same. There's a bunch of hidden songs in the title, the name entry screen that are still there.
Oh, funny.
The farmer house, you said, like, its name's Richard, his villa, with the frogs inside. Mm. You wait there long enough, it plays a song called Tataka's Song, which is hidden.
Oh,
in
yeah,
games.
That's funny.
That's in there as well.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
They just have to wait in the frog guy's house?
Yeah, just wait long enough. They made it longer, I think, you have to wait this time. But all those are still in there. They didn't really add anything uniquely new. Honestly. Okay. So no like big huge secret that wasn't present in the original.
But it's fun. It's fun to think of like people that have never played a Zelda game ever playing Link's Awakening.
Right.
People who have played a lot of Zelda games but never played this one playing Link's Awakening. People who, you know, like played it like know the narrative but had never played it, checking it out. And then, you know, Damiani over here is just like, like, no curve jumps, you know? Like, it's
that's
fun. It's like,
to
I think that. I think that's what's so brilliant about Zelda. And I think that's what, even now, 2019, I'll see some tweet of some crazy guy in Japan who's like, did you know that you could do this in Breath of the Wild? Like, I didn't. What?
Yeah.
And it's like, no DLC, no update or something. It was in there the whole time. He's just, you know, some weird physics thing. So
Fighting
it's
log to the moon.
You can tell a game that you can. I can tell how good this game was on the Game Boy from playing this on the Switch, and that's cool. It's cool that shines through.
And like, there's a little bit of like, oh yeah, this is an older design philosophy, but it didn't really get in my way. You know,
that's good to hear.
I really liked this game.
I want to say this final thing for you, Ian.
Mm.
I don't know how much you ever dove into like the development of this game or anything about the inspiration for this game.
Yeah, not really.
Do you know one of the big inspirations for this game? Its premise.
Dark Souls?
Like the townspeople, the concept of the
town. They knew.
The townspeople and like how the world works.
What?
Brigadoon.
Twin Peaks.
Oh. Now that you say
the
that,
developers
I'm like, okay,
said like they were very influenced by Twin Peaks, which was airing at the time.
That's 92, right?
So somehow they were watching it in Japan.
That is awesome. Damn.
Yeah. Wow. Also was... partially involved or influential in Majora's Mask as well, but this is the game that
pick
started
up the phone in the tree, like, electricity.
Sometimes
Link's
my
like, what?
Arms bend
what?
Back. Link is like,
basically the inspiration for the characters, like they wanted really quirky characters with the kind of like personality styles of the ones found
this
in Twin
is
Peak.
Definitely
and this aura
the Twin
of
Peaks
mystery and like
of,
yeah,
the Zelda version of Twin Peaks townsfolk. Now that you say that,
I was
that's
like,
a headline.
Without spoiling it, I was trying to like see if Ian either researched it or tried to ask, like, was this said anything to do with Twin
that'd
Peaks?
That'd be dope if you were like,
if I was like, this feels like,
strangely like, Twin Peaks vibes.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone really caught on to that like ever until they read that tidbit.
They played it with a light touch because they didn't have a character like holding a log or anything. Like they didn't like. It's very Nintendo to be inspired by but not reference.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Whereas, like, you know, other creators definitely like, you know, Swery, it's like you know he was into Twin Peaks when he was making Deadly Premonition, you know?
There was also a whole boomerang sequence that Lynch cut out of Twin Peaks that a lot of people didn't know. So, there's a weird marriage.
I wouldn't be surprised, dude.
Yeah, the training sequence. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you both of you for joining me on this journey to discuss your first, not first impressions, but like what it was like to play Link's Awakening for the first time. Very unique perspective there.
Yeah.
Woo. Good stuff. I think we are done talking about Link's Awakening, though. Done way too many videos.
I'm going to get back to playing it.
Yeah, a lot of videos.
Do that color dungeon.
Yeah, enjoy that. Yeah, have a good time finishing that up, Brandon. It is a fun ride. But until next time, everyone, may the way of the hero lead to the Triforce.